Hey, Chad, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah.
How about...
No, not again.
Okay, what about...
I just saw that last week.
Okay, oh, I got it.
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So, what'd you think of Somewhere in Time?
I was pleasantly surprised.
Oh, good. Good. So, welcome everybody to You Want Me to Watch What?, where twice a month Chad and I pick movies that the other hasn't seen, because we've seen a lot of movies, but we've not seen them all.
Wonderfully put, Schmitty.
And so we present a movie to the other one that the other one has not seen. And so this, my selection for this month is the 1980 romantic fantasy drama, Somewhere in Time, starring Christopher Reeve, Jane Seymour, and Christopher Plummer. And it's based on a 1975 novel, Bid Time Return.
Yeah, it's a good change.
By Richard Matheson. In fact, I think the book in subsequent republishings was renamed Somewhere in Time. So, yeah. So, the movie starts out in 1972, and college theater student Richard Collier celebrates the debut of his new play. They just wrapped. Everybody's giving it rave reviews, you know, yay, good job. You know, hey, there's somebody in the audience who thinks this is good enough for Broadway, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's having a good time. When this mysterious old woman kind of walks up to him, parting the crowd as she goes, hands him an antique pocket watch and says, come back to me, and then leaves. Nobody knows who she is. She doesn't say anything else. We see her go back to a hotel, the Grand Hotel, where she seemingly passes away that evening in her sleep. 8 years later, Richard is a successful playwright living in Chicago, but he's got writer's block and he's struggling to get the next big play out. And he needs a break. So he just grabs some stuff, jumps in his car, and starts driving. And he ends up in Michigan in front of the Grand Hotel. He's driving along. He passes it. He stops. He backs up, thinks for a second, and then pulls in. So he goes. He checks in. He settles in. He goes down to go get dinner. He's got about a 40-minute wait before the restaurant even opens. And so he's just kind of looking around the hotel. And they have a hall of history, because the Grand Hotel is very old by this point. And they have antiques from the early 20th century and stuff like that. And then a vintage photograph on the wall catches his eye. It is the most beautiful woman he has ever seen, and he becomes smitten with this photograph. I mean, she's beautiful. Come to find out, her name is Elise McKenna. And she was a stage actress back in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of becomes obsessed with her. He starts trying to find out more about her, digging, going to the library, because she just kind of dropped off the face of the earth after a certain point. And in his research, he comes across an article written about her later in life, and it shows a photo of her, and it turns out she's that old woman who gave him the pocket watch. Well, now this is really confusing, clearly. So he goes and tracks down where she was living, her caregiver and stuff. Talks to her. This caregiver's going to give a bunch of stuff to charity and whatever. And he's just there. More and more things are coming up that should not make sense. She has a music box crafted to look like the Grand Hotel that plays his absolutely favorite piece of music ever by Rachmaninoff. And it's like, why is this song here? Why is this, you know, what's the connection here? And then he finds that Elise has also been, had also been interested in time travel. Like, okay, that's weird. And so he goes to see an old college professor of his who says that he possibly was able to hypnotize himself into believing he had traveled back in time. He went to, like, Italy or Rome. He was in Rome, I believe, and he was in a hotel. And he tried, and just looking around at the antiquities around him, he tried to will his consciousness into traveling in the past. And for, like, the briefest of moments, he could have sworn that happened. But modern things kind of kept pulling him back. So, taking all this in, Richard goes back to the hotel and does some more digging. And come to find out that apparently he actually had gone back in time. He actually was at the Grand Hotel in the early 1900s. There is a login, a logbook, a guest register from 1910 with his signature in it, a room number, and Chicago, Illinois, which is where he says he's from. That's proof enough for him with all these other things going on. So he makes preparations. He gets a suit that is authentic for the early 1900s. He moves every modern piece of thing out of his hotel room into the closet, whatever. The room is literally just a bed at this point. And he tries to hypnotize himself with a tape recorder, but it fails and it fails. And he finally realizes, well, crap.
Well, of course.
Of course. So he turns it off, shoves it under the bed, and begins to verbalize to himself what he wants. And he wakes up, and it's 1912. I think I said 1910 earlier, but it's 1912.
It's a really good effect also, showing the fading out and the fading in.
Exactly, yeah. And so he is... First off, he's awestruck because now he's in the past. It looks it, it smells it, it feels it. And then he sees Elise McKenna and he approaches her. And the first thing out of her mouth is it you? And this, you know, it's like, well, yes, it's me. How did you, whatever. And then her manager shows up and ushers her away, William Robinson is his name, and tells Richard, just go away. Don't come back. Well, over the course of the rest of the movie, he continues to kind of con and sneak his way into being in her presence. They talk, they build up a little bit of a rapport, and she agrees to spend the day with him. So they sneak away and they go to the beach. They take a boat ride. They do all this like first date kind of things just to get to know each other. And she starts to fall in love with him. And he asked her about that, is it you thing? And what she said was, well, William just kind of has the sixth sense about things. And he had told her that she was going to meet a man that would change her life and that she should be afraid of him. Well, clearly she's not afraid of Richard. He's a very charming young man, very lovely personality, and she is in fact falling for him. She's at the hotel because they have a stage production area and she is performing in that play that is being produced there. The night of the play, he goes and he attends it and he's enjoying himself. She comes out and she breaks script and gives this wonderful monologue on love, and she's looking directly at him. And while backstage it's pandemonium because they don't know what she's doing. And then she jumps right back into it and it's all fine and whatever. William, realizing what is going on, sends word to have Richard come out and meet him and talk to him. Where he ultimately is accosted, tied up, and left in the stable. Because that night, The theater troupe, including Elise, are moving on to Colorado. That is their next stop.
They're all supposed to leave.
And that night, when Richard doesn't come to her hotel room, she sadly sends her stuff out and she leaves. Richard wakes up the next morning, staring down a horse, frees himself, runs to the hotel, and he's just beside himself. He's lost her. And then lo and behold, here she comes. She could not stay away. She knew something had happened, and she came back. And they embrace, they make love, and the next morning, they're sort of planning their future when he reaches into his pocket and pulls out a coin, which is from 1979. And that piece of that modern token shifts his mind back, and he is pulled from 1912 back into present. The whole time watching Elise get, you know, the camera iris just shrink around her, and she's screaming for him because he's disappearing. The last bit of the movie, we see Richard just destitute. He tries desperately to hypnotize himself, but it doesn't work. And over the last 5 or so minutes of the movie, we see him just wasting away. He's moved into the hotel effectively. He hasn't left. Mm-hmm. He hasn't eaten. He doesn't sleep. He's wasting away. And somebody finally comes in to find him, and as he's dying, they're trying to resuscitate him, and you get this beautiful shot of his consciousness, like from his consciousness perspective, floating up above the bed and out the window, where his soul is then reunited with Elise's. And that's where the movie ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are your thoughts on this movie, my friend?
So, I didn't realize when I started watching it that I had actually been to where this movie was filmed.
It was filmed on location at the Grand Hotel in Michigan.
Mackinac Island.
Yeah.
It was in one of those early scenes when he first gets to the island and they kind of show the main street there.
Mm-hmm.
So, for anyone who's not been to Mackinac Island, when you step off the ferry, that main street looks almost identical now to the way it did then. Also has the most remarkable aroma that is a blend of horse manure and fudge, because fudge is one of the big things. This is one of those where I watched it and was not very charitable in its early parts, because I've only ever seen Christopher Reeve in like 6 movies.
Yeah.
And 4 of those were Superman.
Yeah.
And the thing was, is it always takes just a couple of minutes for me to say, no, he's an actor and he's playing a different role. And so coming in and watching it, I get past that first couple minutes where we don't really know what's going on, just that he's at this party and things are going really well. And then this lady comes in and totally buzz kills everything.
Mm-hmm.
Come back to me. What? Yeah. It was a slow burn movie, particularly because he should know a bit of that future, but he's not in any of her history. When he's doing the research, who is this person? He becomes an expert on Elise McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
He's nowhere in that, so he doesn't know anything, because he was there for what? 3 days?
3 days.
You know? And so I found it a bit frustrating with how tongue-tied and awkward he would get, you know, about things. And then kind of the switch flipped in my head. It's like, oh, right, he's an awkward guy, you know. He doesn't know what he's doing either. It's not like he's running this from the future playbook.
Yeah. He doesn't have the module in his hand behind a DM screen.
He does not. Once I made that connection, it's like, of course he's awkward. This is actually new for him. You know, then it kind of kicked, and then I could watch it. I never did watch it much as a romance, though. I know that they tried to bill it that way, but it stayed very firmly in the kind of the sci-fi time travel realm of things. It's like, okay, so what's he going to change or muck up, you know, in this? Like, that's what I kept coming to.
You say that, but I didn't view it from that perspective because the time, once he goes back, very rarely do they reference the fact that he's, even slightly, that he's not of that time.
Right, right.
And so if you're not, if you were to just walk in, you wouldn't, and watch it for a couple of minutes, you wouldn't know that he had traveled back in time. It's just, oh, he's trying to woo this lady.
Yes. That would be an in-universe thing. Me, yeah. Out of universe, having watched things like Back to the Future and Bill and Ted and Quantum Leap. And it's like all time travel movies have some aspect of it in which something can be changed or something has to be very carefully done to not be changed.
Yeah.
In this case, what we have is the time travel style of movie in which it was a foregone conclusion that he had already traveled back in time. The future that existed required him to go back in time.
Uh-huh.
The doorman already kind of sort of recognized him or recognized his name, you know, mm-hmm. Because he was the boy who played ball.
Yep.
His name being in the thing and him knowing when that happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so there's these different... And they even kind of joke about it a little bit when, like, he's signing in his name and he gets the key, but it's for the wrong room.
Yeah.
From what he
and
saw.
You can see the worry.
And he's
on
like,
his face.
He's worried. He's like, what the? No, it has to be this. And then somebody comes up, is no, that room has been booked and swaps out and is like, oh, you got me, movie. You got me. You got me. So, Christopher Plummer is a gem. I love him as a villain. He works so well as the villain because he wasn't completely believable, but he was mostly believable.
Yeah.
You know, he was 99% there where it's like, oh, right. You're planning on riding the coattails of this famous person. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm there.
He's a villain in the aspect of a most human villain, not a super villain bent on world domination. Just, I want what's mine and what's coming to me. And the only way to get that is this.
I want what's
and
mine.
You are in my way.
And she's mine right now.
Yes.
And so getting to watch those things and letting the pieces fall into place. It's one of the more enjoyable aspects of the movie watching for me is because, like I said, I come into it with certain things that just my experience and background just kind of stick in my head. And then I come in with the other podcast's, you know, critical eye. And it's like, that's not what we're doing here. We're here to have a good time. And it's like, so after about the 5 or 6 minutes, like, right. Okay. I'm just going to let this, I'm going to let this play out. How was go ahead and creep on the octogenarian there, Christopher? Yeah, that's not creepy.
It's one
at
of those
all.
Where there are
sorry, Richard.
There are times. Yeah, it's one of those where at times you're like, this is borderline creepy, and then something happens, you're like, okay, but it was creepy on the other end as well, so it works. It's like, yeah, he's creeping on this old lady, but only to find out she'd been creeping on him the entire time. Like, oh, well.
Well, clearly everything is fine.
Yes. So
I was dissatisfied with the ending. You know, where he wastes away and dies, and there's like the sweet, you know, sweet moment there of meeting in the afterlife kind of thing. It bothered me so much, I had to look it up to find out what was going on there. So, spoiler, if anybody plans to read the book, in the book, at the beginning, he's been diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Oh.
And so, in the book, he was always going to die.
The rest of it kind of follows as it does, but it's just we have a new beginning there that lends credence to the, oh, right, okay. Why does he die at the end? Because he's a reasonably strong, you know, healthy 30-something-year-old human male. Despondent or not, he probably would have lasted longer than 3 days.
Well, if you're not eating or drinking.
Yeah, maybe. But he's also in a climate-controlled, you know, hotel room.
True. So a few behind-the-scenes things.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't do very well in the box office.
I would imagine at the time this came out, it was probably just a little bit, I don't want to say slow, but I mean like 1980, there was this push for faster kind of paced things going on.
Yeah. And also, it didn't help that they weren't really allowed to publicize it because there was a Screen Actors Guild strike, so Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour weren't allowed to talk about the movie. So they couldn't go out and say, hey, I'm doing this thing, you should go see it. Also, Universal had spent $2 to $3 million on this other project called The Blues Brothers that they wanted to recoup their money on. So they were pushing that.
I mean, it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. So this is literally one of those.
1980 was a no joke good year for movies. Holy
crap.
Are you seeing this? So Superman 2, The Shining, Star Wars 5, Airplane, Caddyshack, Raging Bull, the original Friday the 13th, Flash Gordon, Elephant Man, you know, 9 to 5, Popeye. Okay, Popeye's not great, but I still like it.
It's still a good movie, yeah.
I mean, it ranks like number 21 of the year, but the ones ahead of it.
21 of the year is still pretty good.
But the ones ahead of it are like really fantastic movies.
Yeah. So it was literally kind of a hidden gem amongst all this other stuff going on because it could not be publicized for one reason or another. I was first introduced to this movie. I didn't see this movie until I was in like my 20s, but I knew about it all the way back to like fourth or fifth grade.
Okay.
And the reason was my grandpa had the soundtrack on vinyl. I never listened to it, but the album, the artwork was like the movie poster where you've got Christopher Reeve, and I knew who he was because I'd seen Superman, and this like minimalistic line drawing of Jane Seymour's face in the background. And I would just, it's not like I was obsessed with it, but I'd be looking for other things. It'd be, and I would just stare at it for a few minutes like, oh, this is something. I don't know what this is, but this is something. And then I go about my business, whatever. So it's always kind of been in the back of my mind in one thing or another. And then I came across the movie as opposed to the soundtrack. I'm like, okay, oh, and that's what this is. Oh, that's what this is. Okay. That's pretty much all I've got. All I've really got to talk about for it. Do you have any final thoughts on it?
This is one of those movies that you should watch as a date night movie.
Yeah. My spouse did say she was doing something and kept kind of coming in and out of the movie. And she the next day, she's like, I want to watch it. Like, sit down and watch it. No joke. I think I would enjoy it. I'm like, yes, I think you would too.
You know, it fits into that kind of spot of, okay, it's a little bit slow. It's a perfect movie to kind of cuddle together on the couch with some popcorn, knowing that we're going to take a couple of hours and we're going to watch this and it's going to be great.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be just sweet and it's going to be awkward and the meet cute is intriguing. There's a bit of, if you're not going to watch Princess Bride, watch Somewhere in Time.
There you go. It's a date movie.
Yeah. A solid date movie.
There you go. It's a date movie. Another one for the category.
Another one for the categories.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much all I've got. I think it's your turn.
I'm going to come up with a thing.
All right.
Hello, Meat Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics and books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.